Hello, I'm Simon Mercep. This is Crave, the podcast dedicated to film, music, theatre, television, anything that's been entertaining me and Steve McCabe lately.
And this week, Alien Covenant. Can it possibly resolve the profound muddle that was Prometheus?
A story of Dunkirk told in an unusual but clever way with a stellar cast.
The sweet and sad farewell from a great New Zealand rock and roll poet.
And we dip into a bar in Kingsland, Auckland, to sample New Zealand Music Month. Right, now back in 1979, Steve, there was this famous movie tagline which proclaimed, "In space, no one can hear you scream." Do you remember that one?
Remember it very well.
Yeah, ever since, I have to say, I've been rather taken with the Alien series. Not, I hasten to add, the awful sidebar that was Alien versus Predator. But even that original series, The Aliens, Steve, did they take your fancy, those films?
Well, no, I mean, there really is only so much mileage in this anonymous killing machine that just, like, kills for the sake of killing and basically is a cesarean section gone terribly wrong. You've seen it once, you've seen it a million times. No, I'm sorry, I have a feeling of that being milked.
Ooh, but you showed your professionalism because you gritted your teeth and you and I have seen the latest in this franchise.
We can only hope, well, we hope it's the last, possibly.
Yeah. This is the sixth film, by the way. It's called Alien Covenant. And this one, like the one immediately before it, Prometheus, is basically all about the director, Ridley Scott, explaining or trying to explain to us what actually happened leading up to the events in the first Alien film. And my question to you, Mr. McCabe, is, has Ridley Scott won you over with this film?
And I'm afraid the answer, well, was very nearly yes, but I'm not sure. I'm really not sure what to make of it. I mean, here's the first challenge.
Yes.
Tell us the plot.
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me that. Well, the problem with this is, if you tell too much of the plot, you're going to give too much away. So I won't tell too much, but I tried very hard to boil this down here, Steve. Basically, we can say Covenant is a spaceship. It's carrying colonists heading towards a new planet. Along the way, the crew picks up a signal which appears to be that of a human voice, and they go off to investigate. They find a planet with the civilization of the engineers. These are the people we met in Prometheus. And the crew discover what's happened to the two Prometheus crew members who survived at the end of that film. And those two were the synthetic David, who was played by Michael Fassbender, and Dr. Elizabeth Shaw, played by Noomi Rapace. I'm not sure if that's how you say her name. She of Girl with Dragon Tattoo fame. So, Steve, they, in this new film, the crew, they stumble, of course, across the alien creatures. They have to battle them to survive. They have to escape. This all sounds rather familiar, does it not?
I'd go as far as to say formulaic. I mean, it cleaves quite closely to a template, doesn't it, really?
Yeah.
And to the point that you can almost sort of map the characters from one film onto another. So Prometheus had the aforementioned Miss Rapace as Sigourney Weaver, basically, as Ripley, who,
yes,
this is a character who echoes through all of, and I have to correct you, it's Sir Ridley. He's not just Mr. Scott anymore.
Oh, I do apologise. Sir Ridley, yes.
Yes. So it does sort of echo through all of the Alien canon since back in 1979. We've always had a Ripley character, and it's always been a woman in some sort of muscle vest running through a spaceship, wondering if she's going to have something erupting out of her chest. And this time we've got Daniels, played by Catherine Waterston. I mean, played very well, obviously. But nevertheless, we've seen her before.
Yeah. You know, the biggest thing for me going into this film was just, what were they going to do with the story, Steve? Because I left Prometheus, the preceding film, I was just so confused. Even after seeing Prometheus a couple of times, which I've done on DVD, I still don't know. I have not been able to work out exactly what the story was telling us about these engineers and these aliens. So rather than spend hours right now talking about it, I actually I've got a little exercise for you and our listeners.
Go on.
In our website review, I've actually gone to the trouble of writing out what I think are the unanswered questions posed by Prometheus.
Oh, that could be an awfully long post.
I know. It's a hell of a, but it was a very interesting and, but yeah, tiring job. But anyway, and the key thing to remember, I think, in all of this is that the in that preceding film, Prometheus, we are told that the engineers created this terrible creature of terror 2,000 years ago, at the same time as said creature is apparently yet to evolve. Now, if that's not a time loop, I don't know what is, but I...
It seems to me like, and this is my big objection, not only to this film, but to an awful lot of the current, both science fiction and fantasy, the lines do blur, let's face it, is... Well, here's what we'll do. We'll talk about the structure of the film, and I'll tie it into that. First half of Covenant is classic science fiction. It's beautifully done. It's somewhat slowly paced, and it explores relationships between characters in a very particular setting. It explores a crisis that they're dealing with. Do they change their course because of a certain event that's happened, or do they carry on with their planned mission? And the way that that part of the film develops is brilliant. It's very, very nicely done. It's well directed. It's very well paced. It's superbly acted. But then suddenly, once Scott and the gang realise that this is in fact an alien film and we haven't had anything bursting out of a chest yet, then it switches gears and it goes back to being aliens here, aliens there, aliens everywhere. And suddenly, attention to detail and crafting of a story, of a coherent story, becomes less important than fantastic special effects and things blowing up and things bursting out of chests. Did I mention that things burst out of chests? I did, didn't I? Because things burst out of chests, this being an alien film. Yeah. So that's the issue. Once we go back to the things bursting out of chests, then details like your little inconsistency in the time loop become a secondary consideration. And that, I think, is the weakness, not only of this film, but of its entire genre.
Well, I agree with you to a point, Steve. I actually was waiting for something to kick along and tell us what actually happened to those two characters I mentioned, David and Dr. Elizabeth Shaw, from the end of Prometheus. So
right.
I was waiting for something to really not explode, that was the wrong word, but to pick up that thread. And so I didn't mind that so much, but certainly we got a whole, as you say, series of set pieces that very strongly evoke Alien, the original Alien from 79. I guess that was done deliberately, of course, but it could have been seen to be a little bit maybe lazy. Overall, I mean, I would say, Steve, just very quickly, I would say that this film is a little more compact and coherent than Prometheus was. Mind you, that wouldn't be difficult.
Right.
it looks very good. I did enjoy Michael Fassbender. I think he's quite captivating in playing the synthetic.
Oh, isn't he just? Yes.
Yeah, he's the key attraction from that point of view, I think. But here's the thing. I don't think they have still connected the dots between how this film ends and the original 79 Alien film. I think these are all meant to be prequels, right? Well, I think there might still be another prequel still to come, because I think they've still got some explaining to do.
And of course, the ending, very, very, very clearly and very explicitly, as is the current fashion, sets up the next installment quite explicitly.
Yeah, it does. And they've still got work to do. So I don't know whether you're going to recommend buying a ticket for this or not, Steve.
I'm going to say, and I do not fall into this category myself, if you're an Alien completist, if you are a fan of the franchise, then it's as good an entry in the canon as any. However, I don't think it's going to win any converts, to be perfectly honest. If you're a fan, you'll go and see it. You know already if you're going to go and see this film.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, I am probably a completist. That's a terrible thing to admit. But yes, so I would say yes, I would go to see it. I want to see what's happening to the story. That's the most important thing.
Yes.
I've been hooked into the story. I want them to see how they explain it. But if you've never followed an alien film ever, you will be possibly incredibly confused by this film.
No, but all I will say is in the ultimate example of damning with faint praise, it's better than Alien versus Predator.
Ouch.
Yes.
Okay, now let's move on to a film which I would say, Mr. McCabe, is one I'm guessing would be very dear to your heart, you being the patriotic Brit that you are. This is Their Finest, a story about Dunkirk. Well, it is about Dunkirk, but it's not set in the actual event of Dunkirk. Would you care to explain?
Yeah, we're talking about Their Finest here, which is an absolutely lovely film. I enjoyed it profoundly. And how could you not with the cast that's in it and the story it's telling? The story is of a young woman named Catherine Cole, who is a writer during the early days of the Second World War in London, who finds herself co-opted by the Ministry of Information to write what's referred to as slop, the ladies' dialogue for the ladies, in the basically those are the propaganda films that the Ministry were turning out, those were the inspirational films of our brave boys at the front doing a fantastic job defending the homeland. And so it's her job to write this, what they're calling the slop. And obviously, she's a better writer than anybody else in the room, even though she's told very clearly, well, obviously we can't pay you as much as the chaps. And so it's her trying to make her mark in a very much a setting of its time, where yes. where the women were basically, well, they knew their place. They were there to serve the men, but then everything was there to serve the war effort. And, yes. and so she finds herself trying to put together a convincing screenplay of a story of two sisters who take their fishing boat to the Dunkirk evacuation.
Yeah.
And so she finds herself working quite fantastically with a washed up old actor named Ambrose Hilliard, played in the Bill Nighy-est way possible by Bill Nighy at his absolute Bill Nighy-est.
Yes.
And that right there is the central dynamic of an absolutely delightful film. And I loved every second of it. It is a beautifully told. It's light. It's not the most powerful film you'll ever see, but it portrays characters with warmth and with sympathy. They are, there's, you know, you got Jeremy Irons as the Secretary of War, who's only in for a scene or two, but just brings Jeremy Irons to
yes.
play. And you can't go far wrong with that, can you?
Yeah, I found it, yeah, this very clever balance, as you say, of being light, but having some drama and romantic drama. And I think that, I guess the thing about the drama between the bubbling romance between, as you say, Catherine, played by Gemma Arterton, and this guy called Tom Buckley, who's played by Sam Claflin or Claflin, forgive me, I don't know
Claflin,
the pronunciation.
I believe it's
Claflin.
Yeah.
So they both have an attraction for each other. He thinks she's married. I guess the underlying thing there, Steve, is that during the war, marriages and partnerships were split up, and the sort of tension that we see there would have been a real tension replicated thousands and thousands of times over, would it not?
I'm sure it would have been, yes.
So I thought they had quite a ring of truth about how they did that. And I made a note as I was watching it. It was sort of like a feminist movie in a way. I thought the female characters were strong. They drove the story. It was about acknowledging the contribution of women in many ways. I thought it was really well done. But Mr. Nighy, gosh, he's good. The note I made was that he's just got this wonderful lightest of touch.
Yes.
Which is mesmerizing. You just are hanging on almost the raise of an eyebrow or the curl of a lip. He's just a craftsman, and
you get the feeling that in any other actor's hands, that would have been scenery chewing at its finest.
Yes, you're right, because by bringing it down, he draws you in, and I thought that was great. And I assume it was his true singing voice, but he gives us a wonderful rendition of a lovely old song. Is it "Will You Go, Lassie Go"? Is that
yeah,
the one?
Oh, lovely, yeah. Yes, yes,
and that was beautiful. And a nice line in the age of Trump about don't confuse facts with the truth. I thought that was quite a nice line.
Yes.
Yeah.
Remember, you know, it's being played out in the Ministry of Information.
That's right.
Superb. Now, I think that line came from, was it Richard E. Grant? I mean, again,
yes,
we've got
it was.
A weapons-grade cast in this film.
Yeah, very good. And the other thing was it's a great example of a story. The actual story is on the periphery of Dunkirk. It's not about the actual evacuation, but it builds some genuine drama around what was going on around on the fringes, if you like. And I thought they did a really good job of that. So I like you, I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'd really recommend it.
And there's some wonderful sort of details into the process of filmmaking within the films. You got the film within a film conceit.
And so you've got the
wonderful scenes of Catherine and Tom in their office trying to figure out how they get the story through its arc. And then you see the wonderful scene on the beach where obviously they can't recreate the Dunkirk evacuation scenes on film. So you see this wonderful shot of them, of a mat being painted in front of the camera.
I know.
And one of the actors walks in front of it and ruins the entire shot. It's a fascinating insight into the filmmaking process.
It
works, this film, I think, on so many levels. It's a joy to watch. And you're right, it can be read as a feminist tract, if you wish. Even though there is only one real female lead in it, but the film is very much about Gemma Arterton's Catherine Cole as a strong woman who knows what she's about, who knows what she's doing, who is in a situation which does not do her justice, but in which she acquits herself quite magnificently.
I really enjoyed her performance, acting performance. I'd seen her briefly in a couple of other things. I think she was in a Bond movie way back, but I thought she did a really good job.
Oh, she was absolutely superb. Part of this is the director, Lonnie Scherfig. I believe that's how we're pronouncing her name. Danish woman who has recently given us films like... Did you see An Education?
Just remind me quickly. That was...
This was Carey Mulligan... as a young girl, teenage girl.
Yeah, I did see that. Yes, I did.
Finds herself being led astray by a very, very slimy man.
Yep.
It's quite brilliant. She also did The Riot Club, which is a fictionalised account of one of the drinking clubs at Oxford University that probably David Cameron was in. So she's got a track record of doing intelligent, thoughtful, not particularly whiz-bang exciting, but very, very... as I say, thoughtful, draws you in, makes you want to engage with the characters type films.
Yeah, they did a good job. And I think, tell you what, Steve, I think we both clearly are recommending it. You go out and see this film while it's still around.
Oh, most definitely.
It does add a little different view, perspective to what's coming up. I think it's in July when the Christopher Nolan brings us his version of the Dunkirk story, which is actually set in Dunkirk. He better deliver something pretty special.
Well, it's going to be a very, very different approach to it.
But I
would say that Scherfig has definitely set a high bar. Now, Simon, I've been in this country long enough to know that one of the archetypal Kiwi rock bands, certainly from your generation.
Careful.
Yeah. Truth. Remember, don't confuse the facts with the truth. One of the archetypal bands was Hello Sailor.
Yeah, true.
And the last album from its famous frontman, the late Graham Brazier, has just been released. It's been released posthumously and crowdfundedly.
Yes.
And it's called Left Turn at Midnight. Now, obviously, as we said, this is from your generation. So what did you make of it?
Well, I like it. And the more I've been listening to it a few times and it's growing on me and I'm liking it more. It's kind of interesting because you're listening to something new, but it's kind of nicely familiar as well because the album is a mix of some mid-tempo rock, but generally slower, folkier, bluesier acoustic work. The tunes very much take you back to the sort of songs you would have heard from Hello Sailor and Brazier earlier on. And he was always known as a bit of a wordsmith, and he's obviously spent quite a bit of time thinking about his lyrics. So I don't think there's any great surprises in it, but I've enjoyed listening to it. And I found it quite knowing he's now passed away and this was his last contribution to the popular culture of this country, I felt quite taking a moment to reflect on what his contribution's been. I've quite enjoyed listening to it. Yeah, what about yourself, because you're a newer listener?
I'm a newer listener. My first introduction to Hello Sailor was when I started watching Outrageous Fortune. as part of my preparation to move to New Zealand many years ago. And so Gutter Black was my first introduction to the band. And I found something that I thought I quite liked the sound of. But listening to Left Turn at Midnight, again, I'm left with a little bit of an Alien feeling. In the sense of, possibly one for the completists, it's clearly not any great surprises going on there. It's very familiar, as you say. It's very comfortable. Clearly, the man knows his way around a guitar and a song sheet. He can write a very agreeable, very pleasant song. He can perform it very, very professionally and slickly. There's no surprises here.
No, I think possibly they would, knowing that this was, you know, getting on an album written late-ish in his career. I suspect a lot of the interest will be actually in what he has written in words, Steve, because he's known as a poet as much as a singer. And some of the material in the album kind of reflects someone who's, you know, he's not ancient. He was only 62 or 63 when he died. But you got a song like Round the Bend, which I take as being a lament for the loss of another Hello Sailor bandmate called Dave McCartney.
Right.
You've got Storm Coming, which I took to be a kind of a funny, whimsical essay on getting old. And you've got a more melancholy take on the same subject in a song called Autumn. I suppose the rockiest track is their first one, Seven Sets of Traffic Lights, which had a bit of a Hello Sailor riff about it.
Yeah.
And then if you do want to genuinely listen to his poetry, he actually has a poem, doesn't he? The very last track is called White, and it is a poem. He tells you it's a poem, but it's got a sort of a swampy guitar backing going on.
I was listening to that thinking, you know, this song's got lineage that goes back to, I mean, you could trace it back, say, to Bob Dylan's Subterranean Homesick Blues, or even Mediate by NXS is very similar in the style. It's that sort of short staccato rhyming phrases. I'm not convinced it worked. Where do you stand on it?
Well, it's interesting you talk about where the influences came from for you. I was hearing there's a New Zealand poet who's been around for a long time called Sam Hunt. And Sam's writing, and when you hear Sam speak it, there was a certain similarity in the lilt. So I was hearing that type of approach to writing poetry. He had some lines like spectral ghost and Swedish host, white ensign, confetti shine, white lightning, black markets, nemesis, nights like this, ashen with fear, your skin, my dear. So, kind of a bit stream of consciousness to a certain extent.
Oh, very definitely.
I didn't mind that. I thought this is him fulfilling his poetic license. I hear what you're saying about, not new, but it's kind of just wrapping up with a bow nicely.
It felt very, very slightly trying too hard, but I think possibly you're willing maybe to cut him a bit more slack than I am because you're possibly a wee bit biased here.
I am. Yes, I was fortunate enough to actually get to meet him in an interview, in a studio interview in 2014. So that's only a year before he died. This is when I was with RNZ, and I enjoyed meeting him. His reputation is, was his front man. He was, all the talk of drugs and fame and hard drinking and whatever. But actually to meet him, he didn't come across at all as anything like a hard-bitten or jaded guy.
Yeah.
He did feel like you were talking to a poet, someone who's got a little soft underneath. I thought he was a gentle man to meet. A good sense of humor. It was pretty hard not to like the guy, so I guess that has affected my view of the album. And I thought actually, did you get the actual CD or have you in front, Steve?
No, but I've seen the sleeve. I'm familiar with the artwork, kind of
interesting image where he's dressed like a classic rock and roll with a black leather jacket and a scarf and his boots and his head cocked to one side. So it's got a bit of attitude there, but it's not a sneering face. It's quite an open.
No, to be fair, the entire album does have that sort of, yep, this is me kind of feel about it. It feels warm and comfortable. It doesn't feel angry. It feels like this is how I'm tying things up.
Yeah, that might be right. I think that might be right. So I have enjoyed it. I do have a gripe though, and maybe this is partly to do with, as you said, there may have been financial constraints to the release of this album, but given his reputation as a wordsmith, given this was his last ever album, I was really disappointed, because I've actually got the CD. I was disappointed not to see the lyrics printed anywhere.
That is a little unusual these days, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a terrible oversight for a guy who's the attraction for many of his fans will be to actually read what he's written. So I did feel let down by that. There may be good reasons for it, and I'm certainly not saying this is a reason not to listen to it, but and I haven't yet been able to find the lyrics written online anywhere, but I'm still searching. But I'm a long-time listener. I've met the guy. I'm a bit biased, but I have enjoyed this album. It's called Left Turn at Midnight, the final album from Graham Brazier.
And now that it is written down, what colour do we paint the town? Sunday best, the unsat test, pastor's vest and pigeon chest, Daisy petal, Hansel and Gretel, Yorick's head, the never dead. Clean underclothes, winter rose, the way it goes, the way it goes. A chapel cross, lemon ice block, an honest man's soul and Seattle rock and roll.
And just to go to the other end of the spectrum, the other big music release this week. Now, I know you're a huge One Direction fan, as I think everyone here at Crave is. I think that's fair to say. I mean, let's be honest. Personally, I thought they were utter twaddle, manufactured nonsense, and no musical merit whatsoever. But I have a teenage daughter who's a huge fan.
And so
they are inescapable. I came home last night from the pictures, and there was some rather loud rock music playing in the living room. And I was thinking, okay, I'm hearing possibly shades of Ziggy era David Bowie in this. I'm hearing definitely some good crunchy rock. There's some glam influences. And it turns out that this is the new release by Harry Styles, late of One Direction.
Okay. And he's coming here for a concert tour, of course.
Yes, he is. He's doing a big tour. He's going to be bringing it one of the last dates. He's going to be in Auckland in December.
Okay.
Mentioned in last week's Crave podcast.
Yes.
And I was duly impressed. This is not what I expected at all. So I think it's worth mentioning that we are not quite as stuck in the past as our advanced years might suggest. and I never, ever thought I'd hear myself saying this, but I would actually recommend giving the new Harry Styles album a listen.
Holy smoke. Really?
I know that's going to have to get edited out in the... Because people are going to hold that against me.
Yeah. Is there a song of relevance to this country?
There is, you mentioned that it's hard to get hold of Graham Brazier's lyrics, but Harry's lyrics are all over the internet, along with forensic analysis of them. And there's one song called Kiwi.
Ah, well, that's a bit of telling, isn't it? Yes.
And I have the lyrics on my screen in front of me right now. And I'll tell you, if you can find a reference to even to Kiwis, let alone our fine country anywhere in these lyrics, then you're a better man than I am.
Okay.
Apparently, again, as I say, these things get analysed to within an inch of their lives. Apparently, it's about Harry's relationship with an unidentified person, and that bears out the lyrics. It starts off, she worked her way through a cheap packet of cigarettes, hard liquor mixed with a bit of intellect. Maybe that's a reference to Kiwis.
That's too true.
Possibly. Who knows?
Who knows? Yes.
Now, apparently he does have a silver fern tattooed on his arm. I don't know. All I know is it's actually a very, very good record. It's obviously written by a team of songwriters who've probably got nothing to do with him. He's written a few of the lyrics himself, I suspect. But you know what? You could do an awful lot worse. The first single he released from this, Sign of the Times, is actually quite a pleasing, again, very, very Bowie-esque. Piano number. I can't believe I'm saying this. I would recommend tracking down a copy. It's all over the internet, so you'll find it very, very easily.
Yes.
Give it a look. And also, here's a tie-in for you. Mm-hmm. When he's not busy putting together his new records, he's actually been appearing in a film that you've made reference to this afternoon.
Not the aforementioned Christopher Nolan film.
The very fellow. I've no idea what role he's going to be actually playing, but he's going to be in there alongside some pretty heavy duty actors.
Is Dunkirk, right?
This is Dunkirk, the Christopher Nolan film. So yeah, who knew that somebody in One Direction actually had genuine talent?
Such an actress, driving me crazy, but I'm into
Right, we need to move on because I'm starting to embarrass myself here.
let's move on. We can stick with some music, though.
Absolutely, and especially right now. I mean, it's highly appropriate to discuss local music. We're Graham Brazier, so we'll come back to some actual New Zealand music since we're in the middle of May, which is New Zealand Music Month. Now, we've got a link on the website to all the gigs, and there are many, going on around the country. But obviously, Auckland being the centre of New Zealand, obviously, that's where the centre of gravity for New Zealand Music Month is. So, Simon, what have you seen?
Yeah, Steve, this week I took myself off to a small bar in Morningside in Auckland. It's called Flight 605, and they had four local acts on in just one evening. So you got good value for money, especially as it was free. And we a range of old and new artists kind of ploughing the country folk furrow, if I could put it like that. We started off with an artist who's been around for a while, Bernie Griffin and the Thin Men, talking about old-style country, soulful country ballads, nice violin, serious country for the aficionados of country music. Then a younger guy called Greg Fleming, although he's been around since the 90s, he was playing just a solo acoustic set. And then finally, Steve, the final act of the night was a guy we've seen before and talked about before on Crave. This was Miller.
He's been something of a podcast favourite, hasn't he? You interviewed him about a year ago for episode 20.
Yes, that was when he just released his EP, and we've seen him play a couple of times since, including opening for Ben Harper at the then Vector Arena. So he's played all sorts of different venues, and he had his full band with him. Went through, I think, the usual selection of songs I've heard before. The band plays them very well. They know the songs inside out. They really attack them well. It's a really well-crafted show. It didn't feel over rehearsed or anything like that. The things I sort of am looking for with Miller, I guess, just to see where it's going is, are there going to be some new songs not too far away? I think I'd like to see where he's going to go with the songwriting. This is the Springsteen fan in me, I think, Steve, because some of the songs really build into a really fantastic crescendo. There's quite a bit of drama and the band really gets into it. And with Miller's voice, which is generally a sort of more pop style voice, I suppose.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm sort of yearning for that Springsteen hard rock, guttural, throw heart and soul into it and leave nothing behind type approach to singing. Well, that's a bit unfair of me, but I was sort of projecting that onto the songs. Hankering for that, but that's probably not the artist that Miller is, and but anyway, that's just my personal little thing. But look, they really know the stuff, and if you haven't seen him, it's worth checking him out. He's building up a good little following of younger fans there. We crowded out this bar. A good night of old artists and new artists, Steve, which I thought was quite nice for New Zealand Music Month.
Definitely.
They were crammed into the bar, and some were spilling out on the footpath to listen, so they did a good job to get them all together. And if you want to find out more about what's on in New Zealand Music Month, we do, Steve, I'm trying to speak English. You've got a link on our website, don't you, for the whole program?
Yes, and there's a lot there.
I just love all the little things that you do. All I need, and I know this to be true.
As we wrap up our little podcast, any other sort of highlights you'd point to coming up in the next few weeks?
In the next few weeks, for the next few weeks, we've got, tonight and tomorrow night at Vector Arena, Spark Arena is supposed to call it these days, we have Green Day. I'll be there in the photo pit taking some photos of that event.
Right.
We've mentioned Boney M, going to be playing in across the country, coming up to Auckland in June. We've got Chris Rock in July. We've got Queens of the Stone Age. That's going to be right up your street, I'm sure, getting into July. But then the big announcements that have come up in the last week, the big new announcements. Do you remember The Selector and The Beat from the UK back in the 1970s?
I remember The Beat. I don't remember Selector.
Very, very ploughing the same furrow, largely.
Okay.
Ska punk.
Okay.
And they're going to be coming to New Zealand. doing a reasonably, well, a short tour in New Zealand. They're also going across the ditch to Australia, but we won't talk about that. But they're going to be here in January in the Power Station in Auckland, the Opera House in Wellington. We've also seen announced Slipknot, the very, very intensely heavy metal band.
Yeah.
Came to New Zealand about 6 months ago. But their frontman, Corey Taylor, is bringing his other band, Stone Sour, to the Vector Arena.
Spark.
I'm sorry. I, for one, welcome our new Alien Overlords. In August, August the 2030s, they're going to be playing in Spark Arena. But probably the single biggest announcement, I've been building up to this, you can tell.
Yeah.
Coming back next year, early in 2018, not long after he was here last, he's going to be Ed Sheeran.
Oh, that's right. Yes, yeah. Eddie.
Oh, you're on first name terms with Ed now.
Oh, yeah.
Now, interestingly, he's not just playing Auckland this time. He's discovered that we have two islands here.
Okay.
And he's going to be doing Thursday the 29th of March. He's going to be down in Dunedin at the Forsyth Bar Stadium. The previous week in September the... I'll try that again. March the 24th, it's a Saturday, he's going to be doing the Mount Smart Stadium in Auckland.
Right, which is where you saw him previously and where you much enjoyed him, as I seem to recall.
It was quite an impressive show, yes.
Yeah, very good. Okay, well, a lot coming up. Hey, so thanks for listening to us on Crave. We really like hearing from you, especially in this case, if you can help us decipher what was going on in that Prometheus film. Please have a read of what I've written on my website review and help me. I could really appreciate it. To email us, the email address for us is, for Steve and I, is podcast@cravepodcast.com.
You can find us on Facebook and you can follow us on Twitter @cravepodcast.
You can indeed. So I'm Simon Mercer.
I'm Steve McCabe.
And that's what's been entertaining us this week.
Excellent.